Okay. We are live. Welcome back. This is another episode of the platform called The Break Room. I title it The Break Room because I feel like we move too fast in life. So it's important to take time to stop, pump the brakes, reassess where we've been and where we're going. And tonight on Fight Night, shout out to Terrence Crawford and Canelo Alvarez. Canelo, tonight I have, dare I say, a blast from the past for me, my personal life. You know, I feel so old. I turned 40 in two months.
I've been 40.
But I think you've been, what?
April.
April what?
I'm a Taurus.
So what sign is that? Taurus? Taurus. Okay. Listen, I have a wife who has all, who's super astrology. Like, she'd be telling me, what's your sun, moon, rising, this, that, and the third.
Oh, good.
So
I love all
it's
that.
It's a lot. You love all that? Oh, so you fit right in. April, okay. So you know the 40 life. I'll be there in 2 months. But this person, I was just telling her off air, is someone I want to say that whenever I think about my childhood or my adolescence, there are few people who I just glimpse into my brain as people who were just like poignant figures of that era, and or they resonated enough with me where their face still embers in my brain. You, Natasha, welcome. You are someone of that stature. And let me give some context. So we grew up together, went to school together in our adolescence. We graduated high school together, what, 22 years ago? 22 years ago, 03. 03. I saw you. I was happy to see you 2 years ago at the reunion. By the way, real quick, did you go to the 10-year reunion? I didn't go. So should I have went to the 10-year reunion? Because it felt like there was less people from what I heard that
there
that
were
year.
Less people on year 20. Year 10 was definitely a vibe. Yeah.
Really?
Way more people. Nicer venue, in my opinion. Yeah.
Really?
I drank more.
You know what's
crazy? I drank more.
You drank more? And you know what's crazy? So to give context, you know, we graduated high school together in 03. And so that 10-year would have been 2013. If I think about life now in 2013, I feel like a baby then. I feel like being 28 years old, 28, 27, 28 years old, you're a baby then.
By then.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You did. So let's go back. So let's go back then, because that means you had kids early. Let's go back then to give you a recap and to give the audience context about you. Like I said, we grew up together. I always found you to be someone who was strong-willed, flaca, but strong-willed, personality-wise. Even as young kids, you always had a voice and a presence. And I guess at the time when you're young, you don't think about it as much. But now, as I get older, I realize for someone to make themselves resonate and be relevant at a young age, that means they have a natural gift and will to express themselves. So if that is true, and if you do agree with me, where did that come from way back when?
A couple of places, actually. My mom, my mom's like a real hard ass. In my household, it was, and I hate to say this because it's not politically correct, but it was the Hispanic Asian way. You got good grades, and you did
what
good,
was that like?
And if you didn't, you got your ass beat. So that's where, because in high, like middle school and into high school, I was always nerdy, but kind of well known, I guess. I mean, I don't want to call out myself like, oh, I was popular, but I like hung out with different cliques and I was known throughout students.
Sure.
And then just like, so personally, my parents only had two, myself and my brother who's 18 months older than me has autism. But he got a lot of the attention. So I had to make myself known in the household to my parents and like remind them, you got another one. So I would tend to be loud. And I would tend to be like, hello, or purposely not seek attention, but seeking attention to get that from my parents. And that just, you know,
followed me,
unfortunately, outside the household.
Right.
Yeah.
You say he's 18 months older than you? Okay,
and he never went to grammar school.
Wow.
Like, he never went to each grammar school. He went to private school in Westchester because my brother has autism.
Really? So, you know, well, let me give you a quick professional and personal quick history of me in the last 15 plus years. So like I want to say back in like late 09, I started working for BOCES out in NIAC. And started being a TA for students on the spectrum, autism. And from then on out, I started working in the Bronx as well in another school. I'm teaching now, by the way. I'm no longer a TA. I'm teaching special education for autism. And, you know, in the last 15 plus years, I've really had a grapple of understanding autism up close in person. You know, I grew up with a cousin who's MR. I grew up with some special needs around me in the neighborhood. And I would say my father, he worked for developmentally disabled mm-hmm. adults in an adult center. But like outside of that, in my adolescence and even early 20s, I didn't have a great experience with autism early on. So in the late 2000s, when I started working professionally as a TA in a school, that was my true blue introduction to the spectrum and what to expect, learning about behaviors and tendencies and all that it entails in the wide spectrum of autism. And now I have a daughter who's on the spectrum, a 2-year-old. So I really know at home now. But you grew up with it for your brother. So what was that like for you as a young lady in the house with an older brother who's on the spectrum? And what was that like for you growing up with that in the household?
A lot of my parents' time. But I should say he took a lot of my mom's time. You know, we grew up in the 80s and the 90s. Things were a lot different. Mm-hmm. Parents back then, especially dads, weren't as present in the house as they are now. And, you know, my dad worked. And then he went to go chill with his boys. So back then, my mom had a lot of the, you know, dealing with my brother, taking him to the therapist, taking him to the psychiatrist, taking him to doctor visits, everything. You know, that fell on her. And it was rough. Like, seeing it from a child perspective growing up, looking at my mom differently now as a mom myself, you know, processing it and having a better understanding, like, oh, shit, you know, my mom went through all these struggles with my brother. And personally, like, my brother's 18 months older than me. If my brother threw a tantrum and I was right next to him, I'd be his whipping post. So he'd get mad and, oh, I'm grabbing Natasha, you know, pulling her.
Oh, man.
You know, and I was, you, like you said, I was blackout.
Wow.
Imagine me back then, you know, my brother unfortunately done some damage. He cracked my skull open. Yeah.
No.
He got mad, so he took the closest thing to him, which unfortunately was a chunk of wood, jugged it at my head and cracked my skull open. Yeah. And this is when I lived in the Bronx. He took a broom, I remember one time in the kitchen, and he hit me with it. But he hit me, like, right here and broke capillaries. And he left me with a shiner. And this was, like, a week before school started. So here I am going my first week of school, and I got a shiner. You know, you don't talk about these things.
Wow. My
grandparents were very well-known in our neighborhood. My grandfather was a supervisor, very involved in the church. And I was going to the Catholic school of that church. So what the adult put out there was, well, you know, my grandfather was teaching me how to box, and I just took a wrong hook. And I'm like, but that's what it was, because they didn't want to embarrass, because my brother did it. And, you know, he did it out of throwing a tantrum fit, maliciously. He just threw a tantrum. He didn't know how to control his feelings, and, you know, it was an outburst. So, that was the norm. That's what I
did. Wow. First and foremost, real quick, are you using your laptop mic, or are you using, what are you, because I feel like you went a little low in your voice. There you go. You're good. Now I hear you. I hear you better. So he's 18 months older than you. How is he today?
He is the best uncle I could actually ever ask for. He, you know.
No kidding.
He's 41. He's about to be 42. His birthday is October 21st. I'm 18. My parents are the 21 number.
Awesome.
They got married.
Okay, numerology. Okay.
Yeah.
August 21st. Okay. 20. I see that.
No, he's a good uncle. I can't explain. You know, 41 kind of
tracking
4-year-old body. Well, 4-year-old mind.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's
right.
He has his routine. He doesn't like to break from it. As you well know, people who have autism, they like to have their routine regularly. And it's a trick. trigger for them to worry about their routine. He does a lot better with managing his feelings and his emotions for a long time. You know, every now and then my mom has to have his medicine adopted because it depends on his mood swings, you know. And then we have had episodes with him having taken medication for so long that, you know, he gets toxic echinacea. I know I'm saying it wrong, but it's when your body has an overload of certain medications and you start getting sick, like you start biting your lip. You're very twitchy. It's like you have, I call it the wiggle, because I work with other, I work with kids. Now I work with kids. I'm an ABA therapist. That's one of my jobs. Yeah.
Okay, you're an ABA therapist.
But, you know, I have life experience. New parents who I'm working with, you know, they don't know. This is their first time. So, like, I kind of try to break things down for them in layman so they have a better understanding. Because even when you're talking to a doctor, like the doctor, you know, some doctors, depends on who you go to, well, doctors are different, but some have these doctor complexes, and some talk to you and relate to you one-on-one, and more personable, and they have a better bedside manner. Some don't. So, you know, parents need help, and who do they go to? Most times, it's the first people on hand with the ABA therapist or RD.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. My daughter was getting early intervention for a full year, and she just stopped in a month ago. Well, late August, she stopped because now she's in a 3K program in special education. And, you know, with her EI, early intervention, she was getting ABA therapy, like, daily, like 2 hours a day. And I saw the improvements. I saw her making connections, you know, and we have a long way to go, as you know, with your brother. But I also have a history of working, like I said, at BOCES first before the Bronx. And I used to work with a teacher. He specialized in ABA. And he had a CB something, CBA something. So, you know, with him, I learned a lot back in like 2008 when I worked with him. So ABA therapy has always been in my mind for the last 15 plus years. But it's interesting to see that you're now a therapist yourself and whatnot. And what's that like professionally, like trying to, what you can say, what is that like professionally to be an ABA therapist?
It's been rough. I just started as an ABA therapist in May because I officially have my second bachelor's thing. So I got my second bachelor's in sight. This time around, I was like, I'm going to get this degree and I'm just going to hit the floor running because I don't want this degree to go away. Because my first degree was in criminology with a minor in legal studies. And unfortunately, those dreams got put on the shelf because I became a single mom. So 12 years later, I went back and I got overzealous. I started a tri-major doing healthcare science and nursing. Completed degrees in psych and healthcare science, but a whole on nursing. It was ultimately my goal was to become a psych academic.
Really? They make money from what I understand.
So schedule, you know.
That was
what gave me, like, I want to do this. I made my own schedule and I can make things. And I don't have to give up being a mom or my career. And that's what I was running into.
Right.
But it's been rough these last couple months. Mm. Like, my first case was not easy at all. I got literally, I would come home 4 days a week getting my ass beat.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. Oof.
It got to the point. He filled out, like, by week three going into four.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I try to tell people who don't have any or minimal interactions with special needs or autism children, how, I don't want to use the word blessed, they are privileged in a way of like, privileged, like they don't know some of the grinds that come with this life, you know what I'm saying? Of whether you're professionally treating somebody, family member, like you know and I know, or all in between. It's a, like my daughter, my two-year-old, for the last few months, for some reason, 3-4 nights out the week, she'll be up at 2 a.m. She'll just wake up, come bug me in my bed, 2 a.m., and she won't go back to sleep till like 5. It's like, yo, we up. We partying.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm like, is it the food?
Is it the food? Is it what? Not on the spectrum. Oh, my God.
So you know what time it is. But you know, there's just a certain attrition, a daily attrition you have when you're dealing with somebody on the spectrum or special needs. And folks who don't have to deal with that, they have no idea.
And the first timers,
what they are.
Even if, let's say, people who choose to go down that path professionally, right? They get their first case, and sometimes it's just internal. And they're like, nope, it's not me. Mm. Like, you know, honestly, it's a path that you do. If you, it's something like you're going to make a difference. And if you don't have that will or want in you, don't do it.
Right. I agree. You have to want it. You have to want to be either an advocate for those who can't do for themselves. You have to want to dig deep and go through the grind, sometimes physical. As you speak, I'm looking at scratches the other day for one of my students who's killing my leg, scratching it with long nails. I'm like, why didn't the mom cut his nails? But maybe she won't allow him to at home. You know, like I try. And that's another thing too. I learned through my professional life, the last 15 years of special needs children, autism, and now my daughter, I've learned so much empathy for family members, for parents, for siblings like yourself, who are at home with the daily grind of it all, what they take home. Because, you know, a teacher could be with a kid for 6-7 hours, but then that's it. They clock out. But, you know, the family's there, you know, on holidays, and just, you know, weekends. And it's a daily, nonstop grind. And I have a lot more empathy today for all people, all families who are advocating special needs children. So, you know, I'm with it. And speaking of families, you had texted me something the other day. We're talking about potential topics. You had texted me a series of topics that you would like to, you know, peruse through. And the first one, well, the first one was parenting in general. And you mentioned you were at one point a single mom. Am I right? Okay. How long were you a single mom? And when was this?
My first son, Aiden. I found out I was pregnant 2 weeks after having left his dad.
Left his dad? How far back are we going?
2008. I found out we broke up, a very messy breakup. I debo'd my apartment that him and I had together in the Harbor in Hattiesburg. Anything I paid for, but anything my family gifted us, I'm insured. Please. Very funny story. Rebecca Wallace helped me debo the apartment. Shirley.
Rebecca, shout out to you. Shirley, Rebecca, yeah, shout out to y'all.
That was a crazy debo. That was definitely a crazy debo. And then I had found out that I was pregnant with Aiden, and I had miscarried twice prior to Aiden. So I was like,
really?
I got a good job in the city. I'm making decent money. I'm just, if I got to be on my own, I got to be on my own. It is what it is.
Right.
The dad was 1 foot out the door, 1 foot in the door with the pregnancy, during the pregnancy. You know, as my mom would like to say, he would, instead of crawling through the window, you know, he'd just wait for everybody to call to go to sleep and then just coming through the side door. And that's how it was for a while, for a very long time, until Aiden was like two. So from basically right after conception to Aiden almost being 2 years old, I was a single mom.
Are you saying by 2 years old,
Dad didn't want his favorite Transformer being played with by anybody else, so showed back up at the door to basically beg his way back in and track me. That's how I got Blake.
Oh my God. So he comes back in 2 years for his Transformer, slides his way back into your good graces.
I got knocked up with Blake.
Well, you are Latin, so y'all fertile as hell. My wife's Dominican, so yeah, I understand. Three daughters, Jesus. Wow. Okay. So then you had Blake shortly after, and then
we had Blake. And by the time Blake was, she had just turned a year, like maybe 13 months. I found out that he was doing what he was always doing. Yep.
Being outside.
Living a double life.
I don't understand why dudes, well, I shouldn't even say dudes, people, because some of y'all ladies as well are outside too. I don't understand why people feel the need to have these double lives and take more than they can chew and be outdoors like this when they know they have a family at home.
I don't either. Understand. I come from
the more.
Yeah, I don't either. I come from parents who did that, and that's very messy. Not a cycle that I wanted to have ever repeated or have my children endure. Mm-hmm. And that man knew that from the very get-go, because I was very transparent about that. But from the mm-hmm. time our daughter was 7 months old, he had been carrying a whole life with this shit. And luckily, I would say,
Jesus,
I guess it was worth it for him.
How'd you find out? How'd you find out? Okay, so this is what like late 2000s. What phone world are we in?
His tablet.
This is past Nextel.
I went to his iPad.
His tablet. Yikes! What a rookie.
And I got the yikes. Receipts. So if he ever sees, and if he ever tries to attend, they're still on my Google Drive. So don't come for it.
I got receipts from when you wanted to contest this in court. Yeah, I feel you, petty. It's all good. I'll allow it. Damn. He was outside leaving evidence for Tasha to see. Really? Okay. Well, since you say that, let me ask you a question then. Do you guys now have a positive co-parenting situation or issue?
Look, I found out it's now been, we're going on 12, 13 years. And this past February, our son went into the hospital for myocarditis, which is inflammation around the heart.
Mm.
He got the neurovirus and as a residual effect from the neurovirus, he came down with myocarditis. It feels like your heart is being like crushed by this sack of water, basically. There's a sack around your heart.
Oh my
God.
The
pressure of it is just really hard. It feels like you're having a heart attack, but you're not having a heart attack. And you could potentially die from it.
Mm.
It's called dehydration. I had not spoken to that man in 2 years. I still have it, so I can't say at the time. I'm on order protection number 5, okay? And we had not spoken for 2 years. My baby has to go to the emergency room and basically vac from the hospital in Warwick down to Westchester to Maria Fahari. And I'm like freaking out. Yeah, I let him know. I try to let him know via text, like, yo, I'm scared. A's in the hospital and I couldn't get a hold of him. So
wait, who has the order protection? He has one or you have one? So he can't come to you?
Not only do I have it, the kids have it. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It got that serious.
One of the reasons why I'm in Orange.
Wow. Sorry to hear that. Wow.
Yeah, he didn't live in Rockland when I lived in Rockland. He never lived foot in Orange. He's always lived in Westchester when we split. But he didn't want me to be happy with anybody else, right? Which is one of the reasons why he came back to begin with, because he got wind that I was moving on and I was happy with somebody. And before it got serious, he wanted to make his plea, which he did, and then trapped me because I got pregnant within 3 weeks after him basically coming back into the picture.
Mm.
But same thing. He didn't want me to be happy. He was, you know, misery loves company. I'm like, yo, I'm done.
Right.
I'm good. I'm done. I tried all I could. I know I put my best foot forward. And at the time when I found out, him and I were living with my parents. So, you know, he had it good. He didn't have to pay no rent. Well, he had to pay rent, but it was like us paying like super cheap, like under $1,000 to my parents. You know, we got four people, a family of four.
Right.
We're eating groceries. We're using the electricity. You know, got to give my parents something.
Right. Sure.
He didn't have nothing except the bills that he had before us getting back together. So student loans, car debt, credit card debt, whatever. For that year and change that he was living with me, what he took care of, if he took care of, not my business. All I know is that while he was with me, he was living another life, despite having 2 kids.
Wow. Mind you, sidebar, before you continue, this is another thing too about me. I'm pretty frugal. I'm not cheap, but I'm pretty frugal. And I'm cognizant of what I spend. So, like, when I hear dudes leading double lives, I'm like, where do you have the time and money for this?
I never understood that. I was like, yo, and twofold. I witnessed it with my dad, and I'm witnessing it with this dude. And, like, I joke around sometimes with my parents. I'm like, please, daddy came back because it was cheaper to keep mom. And my mom's like, I can't believe you. I was like, it was cheaper to be with you instead of having to pay child support, alimony, you know, all of this.
Absolutely.
You were taking him through the ringer.
Absolutely.
In the midst of a divorce. And then, you know, a year and a half into a divorce, proceeding stopped. And the next thing I know, my dad is rolling up in his minivan with all his crap. Well, I'm moving back in. No, you're not.
Wow.
Mom didn't tell me that. I'm not opening the door to you. That was my response. So I never understood right. that. Like, yo, that's hard to maintain. But he made good money.
It's weird slash difficult seeing your family, well, their family, seeing your parents be mortal in their union by going through those hardships, especially when someone's cheating or stepping out. It brings upon so many different emotions. Like, damn, am I disappointed in him or her?
I was totally disappointed.
How do I view them now?
I was always a daddy's girl. I was super.
Really?
I was his freaking shadow, and I was the one really? Who had to break it to my mom.
No, really?
Ooh.
What was that like? How do you even know?
Like,
what the hell? How do you even know? Man, age, sex, location. Sidebar, my screen name was TU, as in pretty ugly. TU Escobar 80. I had great times.
Mine was Little Coco.
On AOL. There would be certain
I'm
people.
26. Like,
Little Coco. Oh my God. They don't know how great. And you know what? Some would say that era of internet is all we really needed.
No,
we didn't need
definitely.
Today's
if we
version.
We can take it back
internet.
And our kids can experience that little, era. Hell of a lot better. And what the shit that we see now.
That's all you need. It's too much now. That was great. But anyway, I spent hours making my profile. But anyway, take me back. You said AOL.
So
okay, what about AOL?
I went through his
emails
and his instant messages, and I printed it out, and I gave it to my mom.
You printed it out? You wasted ink and
I think
paper?
I was in
How dare
grade.
You?
Yeah, I was in seventh grade. Mm-hmm.
Seventh grade? Damn. You bold. All right. That means you were
yeah,
hurt. You were disappointed in her
really,
to have the wherewithal to do. So, what was that like for you and your mom as far as you doing that for her?
She thought that I would be like, I'm her ride or die. And she tried to sidekick me into doing a whole bunch of other shit to make him feel like shit. And I was like, sometimes I would hop on, sometimes I wouldn't. You know, you're a kid, easily manipulated by your parents, you know? Mm. And I was hurt. And vulnerable, and to a certain extent, she exploited that vulnerability and manipulated me to help her do things that I definitely had no business doing.
So you were kind of in the middle of it at times.
And I didn't talk to my dad almost for a year and a half.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
During that era, during that time? Wow. And you know, as a young lady, I'm sure you could use your father's guidance during that time and whatnot, but. It kind of speaks to what I said earlier about you. I've always known you as someone who I could tell can make or take stances. And I could see that when you were young. So maybe like I saw more than I realized because you at home privately are, you know, making stances while getting your ass whipped by your brother and all in between. Damn, Tosh. Where do things stand today with you?
We
and
have
your
a
dad?
Better relationship, but it took a long time. I think it took me having a kid. For him and I to really have a relationship.
Oh, so you would say maybe like in some of your late teens, early 20s, it was still strained?
Because he would always, like once he moved back in, and I nicknamed him Castro. Oh, because
Why?
The man came
Why
home,
Castro?
Moved back in, and then like thought that he can just dictate, put a curfew on me. Like even until I was, like my husband laughed. And my husband could tell you, I met my husband when I was 19 years old. He was 24. Like one of the first dates that he took me out, I was like, yo, I have to be home by 2:30. I was 20. And he was like, wait,
wow,
why you got to be home at 2:20? You're an adult. I was like, because I live at home and my dad starts to bitch. And my dad gave me a curfew at 2:30. So if I'm not home by 2:30, I'm going to hear his mouth or he's going to start blowing up my phone. And I don't need this. It's easier to be home. I don't know. Because he tells our daughter Blake, you know, your mom had a curfew up until she was like 22 years old. Stop playing. You have a curfew.
Oh my God.
He's
over here snitching too. Are both your parents are bawdy, right?
Well, my mom's married.
Are they from the?
So is my dad.
Are your mom's married? Are they from the states or from the island? Okay, cool. Okay, so even as being bred here, they still were on that old school time. That
it was like even my grandparents.
Oh wow.
My grandparents are from the island, and in my early 20s, you know, like, I would be like, I'm coming to the island to visit you guys, but I'm coming with my boyfriend, XYZ. No, tú no vengas aquí con eso. No me lo trae aquí. You know, you're for that shit. You bring your man when you marry. When you're ready to be married, that's when you bring him here. And I'm like, I'm an adult. I'm going on vacation with my man. I can come and chill and visit with you and stay with you for free, or I'll just get a hotel. Yeah, and I really had to put it like that to my grandfather. And I was 23 at the time.
Wow, old school.
So my grandfather was like, God. And it was mainly so because I had went to Puerto Rico when I was 20 or 21 with my ex of 4 years. And then when I turned 23, I was coming to Puerto Rico with actually my first baby daddy. And my grandfather was like, don't bring that shit here. Mm-hmm. So they were very old school.
Oh
my
God.
Parents adopted a lot of that nonsense.
I can imagine. I gotta just hearing your father's stance on the curfew. I can imagine. That's why I asked that. But so when you texted me earlier, you had said like toxic ex. Are you saying? Well, obviously, your children's father is probably one example. But was that the only run-in you ever had with a toxic ex, or did you?
I've had a theory.
I asked because there's data out there that's been out there recent of time saying that women are dating less. Mm-hmm. Fertility is down. Birth rates are down. And even sex and alcohol consumption is down. And not just in America, but like in South Korea, there's major numbers of all across the world. And I asked that. When I wonder about that, I kind of said to myself, well, I've heard stories over the years of women just having crazy stories about crazy exes. And you know, I'm privileged as a man. I am a privileged man. I have a sister who's 4 years older than me. So through my sister, I've watched her dating experience growing up. And I would say, wow, dudes are weird. And even as a guy, you know, being in the locker room with other guys, I knew guys can be weird. But I never truly knew how weird and how crazy men can be until I started being an adult, having platonic professional or platonic personal friendships with women, and they would just tell me things about men they were seeing. I'm like, they did that? You know what I mean? So I'm always fascinated and horrified at some women's stories about their past with men.
I'm very with my 13-year-old, my now 13-year-old, my oldest daughter, I'm super transparent with her. I went through XYZ. Right. I'm telling you because I want to prevent you from either making those mistakes and or pointing out these red flags in men. Because
if you could think back in your memory, Rolodex, what are some red flags or toxicities you saw in different exes that you would warn young girls today or you warn Blake today about what to look out for?
It's cool to date older guys, but I wouldn't date more than 10 years older than me. Like, it has to be, like, maybe 5 years would be the max, but no more than that.
And why is that?
I went through a four-year stint with a gentleman who was 10 years older than me, who at the time was an architect, and I was still in college. I had just started college, basically. To a certain extent, it was like he was grooming me, and he basically controlled, he tried to control every aspect of my life, which is insane.
Oh my God. And you know, it's funny. I had this rule growing up about dating, especially like in my 20s. I would say, if you can't recall Saved by the Bell episodes with me, you're too young for me. Like, you know what I mean? If you don't know who Zach and Slater were, that means you too young. So like, you know, there's a shift in generation as far as content. Like, there's people today who'll say, oh, Degrassi, or oh, iCarly. I'm like, oh, you're young. I'm like, I don't know these things really too well. So it's like, okay, I know in my framework, this is your different generation. So I always felt like, you know, 4 to 5 years is like a good range. And even saying five to me is a little oof.
To me, that's the max. Don't have five. And I made the mistake. I made the mistake. Yeah. You know, to me, at the time, it was like, oh, he's driving a brand new Mustang. He's an architect. You know, he's taking me out to expensive dinners and buying me things, you know. But in reality, God forbid I wanted to try to go out with my friends, my girlfriends, not guy friends, but my girlfriends to the bar locally. You're not going out anywhere. What?
You're not going out.
And he would call my mom and dad.
Yeah.
And say to my mom and dad, I told her she can't go out. Don't let her out. This is bullshit. She's trying to hang out with XYZ, and they're just a whole bunch of hoochies, and that's not what I want her around. That's, you know, birds of a feather flock together, and I'm trying to prevent that. She's not realizing it.
Wow. So, like, he wouldn't even offer any, like, or he wouldn't offer or support any autonomy for yourself to, like, be your own person. Just be under me at all times.
I remember one time I had friends from the city coming up. And it was like, I think it was like Thanksgiving Eve or whatever. And I had friends from Manhattan because they used to go to John Jay. And I talked up NIAC one year.
Right.
So they were like, oh, we'll go and do NIAC with you. We're coming up. They're like 20 minutes away. He rolls up to my house. Where are you going? I'm going out. Thanksgiving Eve. Big drinking night. And I don't drink. I was like, even since high school, I was always dry. Like, I never partied like that. Mm. I would always hang out at the parties, and I was always my crowd, but I was always D&D. So I just always went out to have fun. I never needed that to have fun. And he set up to my parents' house and tried to block the door. And I was like,
wow,
no, I'm going. If you leave this house, I'm no longer your boyfriend. And it had gotten to a point, I was like, okay, cool. Goodbye. And he thought I was like bluffing. I was like, yo, my friends rolled up in their car, went to my room to grab my purse and fix myself real quick, pushed him out the way, jumped in the car, and jetted out. And I was like, I'm out. He stood in my parents' driveway until I got home. Yeah.
Yo, he's psycho. Yeah.
And I should have right then and there,
That
was a year in. I should have right then and there said, no, I'm done. I don't know why I put up with it. For as long as I put up with it, I had screws loose. I don't know why.
Wow. I mean, you know, growing up in high school and even middle school, you would always see, you know, your peers as guys. You would see your peers as girls dating older guys, guys out the school, guys in a certain street life. And I'd be like, why is she messing with this dude? Like, you know what I mean? But I've also recognized that I guess sometimes an older man can at first seem attractive and seem, you know, like a protector or whatnot, or however you define it. But I've always felt like those dudes are
creeps. And he is. So I used to breed Yorkies and import them from Brazil. That's how I paid for college.
Shout out to you.
When him and I were dating, there were two Yorkies that I had that were my own personal Yorkies. We hired, I don't know what else to call her. She was a little girl. She was like maybe 15, 16 years old. That was our doggy sitter. Who did he end up marrying?
Wow.
So if
that came out of left field.
10 years different.
Wow. Oh, so he was a creep. Yep. Your mic went low for some reason. Yo, that's crazy. It's like a 16-year difference. Yeah, this just, like, first of all, even the 10-year difference is crazy. Nutty. Damn. So I he's with her now. I wonder, hopefully he's living the life he wants to live, but that toxic weird stuff, man. I don't understand how dudes can be creeps like that and beat them. To me, what it signifies when the guys like that, like, they didn't get a certain amount of control when they were young, so they're trying to compensate for that. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Or start at home, right? Machismo, maybe, and you know, start at home. You're right. That is toxic. Yeah, you definitely have a history of some toxic dudes in your life. And you know, I try to tell men, like, guys, if you're a hetero male, then the pool that you're dating, which is women, you have to be thankful, because most women are, you know, on the up and up. They're just genuine, good human beings, compassionate for the most part, and you should be able to get along with them. Or you shouldn't have to worry about them, you know, like being controlling like that or freaking killing you on some femicide stuff, because a lot of dudes are out there. They can't handle a breakup. They wild out.
Went to high school with somebody who unfortunately endured that.
I mean, not just went to high school. You know, she was my neighbor. You know, rest in peace to Shannon. But, you know, she was my neighbor pretty much, and down the street from me. And that DV rates amongst men to women and femicide, it's alarming, but it's also alarming how unserious it's taken. It's being taken.
When I tell you, the system is so broken. It's super broken. Think about it.
Right.
I've had five orders of protection. I how do I live my life?
It shouldn't have to be. It shouldn't take five occurrences in court or five appeals or applications of this to work. You know, one should be enough. You know, I had to really recognize. Well, like I said, I have an older sister, so I was always cognizant of women's safety in my life, and was always aware and alert about it because my sister. I recognize that you guys have a lot more to worry about and deal with when it comes to dating, when it comes to your safety. You know, there's a sports journalist, Jamel Hill. I remember one time a few years ago during the whole Me Too movement, she kind of illustrated how, like, you know, like when she goes to when she's in the elevator with men, she doesn't put her floor first. She doesn't press the button first. She lets the other guys press the button first in the elevator, and then she'll press her button because she doesn't want anyone else. She doesn't want other people to know where she's going first. You know, she doesn't want people tracking her, like guys. I'm just like, wow, is it that daily? As a woman, is it that much of a daily awareness how to move around men?
Yeah. And it's sad. My college, my early college years, I went to school at John Jay. 56 and 6, there was constantly construction. Skinny young me walking around. I'm 18, 19 years old. I'm walking past these construction men. And all you hear are whistles. Hey, mommy, come here. Mira, chula. And I'm like, the fuck? And that's one of my pet peeves. Like, my husband jokes. And he's like, you can't take a compliment. I'm like, that's not a compliment. I want a compliment.
Catcalling.
Yeah. I said, that's not a compliment. Because I'll come home. He's like, hey, girl, how you doing? And I was like, you about to get kicked. Don't do that shit. It's like, you're so mean, you're so rough. And I'm like, I don't like that shit. That's not a turn on to me. You need to understand that.
I've heard women don't like the phrase, why don't you smile more? Why don't you smile?
Oh my God.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I hate that.
Yeah, why don't you smile more?
Give me a reason to smile.
Right.
You want me to smile? Give me a reason to smile. Don't piss me off 24/7.
I think some men try to trap it in their minds that they're being chivalrous, but really just being horny. You're just being horny. Like, you really don't mean well. Or you really don't wish positive vibes or positive spirits. You're just horny as hell. Yeah. You wanted to touch upon the experience you've had of returning to college later in life as an adult with kids. Before you start, I want to actually tell you I had a similar experience because, you know, we both graduated in 2003. And I went to RCC right afterwards.
I should have did that.
What would you do? You went to John Jay, you said?
I went to John Jay.
Okay, well, my boy graduated from John Jay. He's an attorney now, a defense attorney. So I have my own memories of John Jay going down there to like hang out with him after hours. But yeah, I did RCC for those 2.5 years. I got my associates, and from like 2006. To like 2017, maybe, I took a long ass break from finishing my bachelor's. Like, I just, like, for a decade plus, I just was zoned out, do my own thing, coasting. And then when I was finally ready to get back into it, to get my bachelor's and master's, it was as a parent. And I was like, fuck, why did I wait so long? Because now it's hard as hell to study with a baby on your hand or your lap. It's hard to take these state exams for teaching when you got to worry about babysitting and this, that, and the third. And I realized, like, yo, it's hard to be a scholar and a student when you have other responsibilities that are not solely school, solely your education. So I kind of have a glimpse of it, but I'm a dude, so I had privileges as well. What would you say it was for yourself as a woman, a working mom, going back to school? What was that like for you?
It was overwhelming. So my first crack at college, I, again, was overzealous. And I went for an MBA program. Mm-hmm. I was taking my master's. I was working towards getting my master's in criminology. Mm-hmm. And the goal was, I'm going to finish my master's within 4 years, get mm-hmm. picked up at NYPD, go mm-hmm. to Fordham Law School, and get my law degree. However, continue for the police force, do my 20 years. And then when I come out, you know, I have my law degree, I could practice.
Right.
That was my goal. And that was the path I had set. And I was very methodical about all of that. I got knocked up. And the year that fall, because I got pregnant I found out I was pregnant in December of 2008. That fall, I was in my last semester towards my master's, and I literally just stopped going.
Oh my God.
I stopped going to school.
You were, what were you, like, defeated? What was, what, why? Why were you?
I was in a toxic relationship, being told regularly, I ain't shit. I ain't gonna amount to shit. I ain't gonna do shit. And I just stopped going to college. And I screwed myself over that last semester because I basically dropped out. So close to finishing my master's, and I dropped out.
Yeah.
And I didn't, the thought of going back to college wasn't even a thought really until 2020.
Wow.
So you're thinking 2008 to 2020.
Wow.
Oh, I'm sorry, 2018, 2019. So the fall of 2018 was when I officially went back.
Like a 10-year break, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And man, like, you know, going back to school is like going back to the gym. You have to really like just like force yourself.
If you, and that's what, that was my issue, because my mom and my dad would tell me, you didn't even finish. You didn't, even though I had my bachelor's, but because I didn't finish my master's degree at John Jay, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't walk away with a certificate saying that I completed my bachelor's. I just had enough credits. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how do you think I even started this master's degree if I didn't get, you know, I didn't finish my bachelor's? Come on. They're old school.
If you don't
have a certificate, you ain't do it.
Right.
So it's like, and then going back, like, I think it took me like 4 months to make the decision.
Mm.
And the reason I made the decision was because I had already done so many years in construction, like out the gate from high school. While in college, I was working for construction firms.
Really?
And I worked up the ladder. But as a female, you cap out. You hit the glass ceiling and construction companies, they're not going to pay you.
Mm.
So that's where I was in life at that point. And I was like, yo, you know, I've given like almost 18 years to the construction industry. I'm not making the kind of money I should be making because it's a man's world. I need to change careers at this point. So talking to Ivy, talking to Marissa, I was like, I think I'm going to go into nursing. I think I'm going to, you know, go back to school and go into nursing. And Rissy was like, yeah, go for it. I back you. That's like the best thing you can do. You know, there's so many scholarships and programs out there. And not for nothing, I went back and I was overzealous. I was a tri-major. I might not have completed all three degrees, but New York State paid me to go to school.
Oh, so yeah.
It was a win.
Right.
I'm paid every semester. It's paying down my credit, my credit card debt.
Down
my car note. Or, hey, you know, I can put an extra payment towards my mortgage this year.
Right.
Because I'm getting money from New York State just for going to school and extra scholarships that I was awarded. So like, yeah, why not?
Right. You know, you said you did about 18 years in the construction field. You mentioned that as a woman, as a female, you were kind of capped out professionally. I assume against your will, you know, just naturally. Can you, for the audience out there, especially men, can you kind of illustrate the differences, even professionally, of opportunities and engagement you'll get as a woman versus, you know, as a dude, like from your experience? Can you try to articulate this to some men who are like, what do you mean? You know, we're all the same, or ain't no, you know, can you explain the differences?
That's the men of the industry is full of shit. It would be, so like prime example, I was a project manager and I would call for site meetings with all my subcontractors, HVAC, electrical, plumbing, carpentry, the carpet people, and so forth, my drywall guys. And they would just see my initials, NM. They would never pay attention to the name. They just see NM. And then I remember one time I called for a site meeting and I had this cocky SOB HVAC guy on site. And he's like, I'm here to speak to NM. And I was like, huh? He was like, oh, you know, from this company, this person sent me an email and we have a site meeting today. I was like, yeah, I'm well aware. Here's the pamphlet for the plans for the construction that I need done. I need this done, budgeted solely for HVAC, under $60,000, and I need it done within 3 weeks. What's your time frame? Well, I'm here to speak to the PM. not you. I don't need to speak to a secretary.
Wow.
So I told the guy, I was like, do me a favor. Can you pull up on your phone the email you got sent? And he pulls it up. And he was like, yeah, I'm here to speak to, Natasha Morales. And I shook up. I pulled out my hand. I was like, nice to meet you.
What?
And he was like, he was taken off guard and back that I was the project manager.
Oh my God.
And then like 5 minutes later, my boss walks in and he saw my face and he goes, what happened? I said, I'll tell you in a few minutes. He was like, hold on, guys. I need to do a walk around with my PM. So he took me on a walk around the house before I do the walk around with the guys. And he was like, what happened? So I told him what happened. So when we walked back to the guys, all the subcontractors, he not like calling him out, but as a general, he told the group, she has 16 years of construction, you know, experience. She knows how to read plans. And not only does she know how to read plans for ground up building, she knows how to read electrical plans. She knows how to read everything. So if you have a problem, you go to her. Don't come to me. Don't call. Don't send me a text message. You deal with my project manager. That's why I pay her what I pay her. And like my boss let it on thick. Like you respect her and you give her the respect needed. I loved working for him because he backed me. He gave me the support like no boss ever has ever given me. But, you know, working for him too, I capped out.
I can imagine. Wow. Wow. Damn. I remember like 05, 06, I was working at Home Depot. Well, really, it was a Home Depot subsidiary called Expo. They did like high-end Home Depot products. I remember this dude one time, this old white guy. I brought him to the car. It's like 05, I'm like 20 years old. 1920. I'm helping him to the car with like some appliance he bought. And he goes, thank you so much, young man. You know, you're one of the good ones, one of the good colors. I'm just like, wait, what? But I was reminded that day that, you know, some people are just straight Stone Age. They're just straight Neanderthal, caveman, old thinking. And they don't know how to embrace and ingratiate a woman or someone else who they're not used to, who is dignified, professional, can hold their own. They're just still stuck in their own ways. And I sometimes pity them in a way. I'm like, wow, you're very archaic. It's just like...
And that's how you gotta call it out articulately.
Yeah.
When you see ignorance.
Yeah, ignorance. It's like, wow, they really make models like you. You should be outdated. But so
actually, back in, what was it? It was just 3 years ago, 2003. A pier had a really bad rainstorm.
Mm-hmm.
That caused a lot of damage in Orange County. And my house, unfortunately, happened to be affected by it. It caused like $130,000 worth of damage to my house.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I had just bought the house in 2020. So I was like, shit.
Oh my God.
Between dealing with the homeowner's insurance policy that I had at the time, never go with the commercial. All I'm going to say is never go with the commercial name brands. If you see that they have a commercial out there promoting, don't go with them.
Why is that?
Because all they do is take your money and they never want to pay out for claims.
Really?
I don't shout their name out because I'm in litigation with them right now. So I don't put them on blast like that. But every contractor that I had came to my house right away. They thought, hi, Mr. Pagan. All right. So we're here, like, you know, because they would meet with me and my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I had a couple of roofers and they were like, oh, hi, Mr. and Mrs. Pagan. Okay. And then would turn to my husband. Okay, Mr. Pagan, this is what. And he's like, he literally a whole bunch of times he would tell contractors, guys, I don't know nothing.
I don't know nothing about this.
It's like nothing. First of all, I know nothing about any of this shit. That's A. B, I ain't the one paying the bill. She is. And C, she's the one. So you got to talk to her. Like, and I would say, I was like, is it emasculating for you? And he was like, no, actually. He's like, I'm actually really, you know, my wife knows not only how to swing a hammer, but how to use it and how to direct somebody to also. So I'm good.
Right.
It's like, okay, because I'm not here to, I want you to be the man. He's like, no, I'm a feminist. I'm good.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I'm a feminist myself, but I also recognize how like sometimes women have to play this game of making their man feel like a man.
Yeah.
Just so he can feel like he did something for her, or he's useful. So.
And that's the biggest complaints. Like, he, not that I emasculate him, but sometimes, like he himself says, sometimes I feel like I have no purpose. Like, why? Because of the fact that I'm the one who, so I'm head of household in our family. Mm-hmm. Is you're head of household. Mm-hmm. You know, you bought this house. We didn't buy this house. You bought it. You know, like, do you make the money decisions? Mm-hmm. You know, and like, our roles are very reversed. Mm. Just to work from home, luckily. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, because he gets to work from home, the responsibilities that typically, like, socially would fall on a mom, fall on him.
Like housework and stuff?
Yeah. So, like, housework, or, you know, getting the kids off to school, packing them lunches, doing hair, because he used to do, like, him and I got together when my oldest was turning 5 and my youngest was turning 3. No, or 2. And he was, and my oldest was 4. So, you know, he was home. I had to go to work. I would tag team him, who was my boyfriend at the time. Mm. He's combing my daughter's hair, you know, taking them to school, dropping them off, doing pickups, because I had to work. And I was always spending that time because I was a single mom at the time, you know. Mm. And it's hard because I have family like, oh, you were a single mom, though. And he like jumps in. He was like, whoa. Whoa. She was a single mom, but she had her boyfriend at home. I was her boyfriend. And I would help. So she was single. She was single for what? I was like, it's different, though. And our history is different because I met him well before I ever met my kids, my first baby. Yeah.
Right.
And during my pregnancy with Aiden, I was seeing my husband. I was back to seeing my husband.
Mm.
And, you know, my husband and I were getting serious, which is why my ex came knocking at the door, wanting to play house. You know?
Mm-hmm. Aiden.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and I had already told him, like, after I knew Blake was coming and stuff, like, I was always transparent with him. I was like, I'm telling you right now, God forbid I find out that you're cheating on me, we're done. And I'm going to go back to Justin. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, I'm just letting you know, like, I've known since I was 19, I wanted to marry him. So if you're going to try to come and disrupt that again, it's not happening.
Wow. That was ballsy to let him know that. Tell him that.
Yeah. And I had told him that, like, I think I was like maybe four months pregnant with Blake.
Wow.
That if I ever found out, I'm telling you right now, that's who I'm going to go to. And that's who I'm going to end up with. So, like, my husband was my best friend. Like, talk about ride or die, knowing where the bodies are buried the whole night. That's what we were for each other. Our relationship was based on, you know, the foundation of being friends before ever becoming lovers.
Interesting. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense that you were able. I'm thankful for you, and I'm grateful that you were able to have him as a nest to lay a foundation with when the time came, because not too many people are lucky with that. You know what I'm saying?
I'm very blessed. And, you know, with every marriage, there's pros and cons.
Of course. If you can't tell me that, of course.
And I never really wanted to get married. To me, because of the example that I had at home, to me, the foundation of marriage was broken.
Mm.
I was like, I'm not getting married. There's no reason for that. For what? For somebody's name? I don't need that shit. I could do that, and I could be that for my own self. Please. And, like, my daughter's 13, and she out of the mouth of babes. You think you're Miss J-Lo from Rockland, because she'll go into my jewelry box and, you know, yeah, I got a collection.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these were past relationships that, you know.
Why are you hating, Blake?
And she's like, because she asked, she was like, what about the ring my dad gave you? Because her father did give me a ring.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, when your brother's ready to propose to somebody, maybe I'll give him that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember Aiden chiming in. He was like, no, I don't want that. That's cursed. Don't give me that. Give me one of the ones that Daddy Justin gave you. But, you know, I'm like, you live and you learn.
Yeah.
You know, I had, unfortunately, a bad example for what marriage is supposed to be growing up. Didn't want that. And that kind of kept me running away from it. So like, even though I would say yes and accept these engagement rings, I knew I wasn't going to go through with it.
Fear of what can come.
Out of fear of divorce.
Yeah, divorce. I can empathize with that. Like, my parents had a rocky marriage. They're still together. They had a rocky marriage. And I remember saying to myself, is it that hard to be married? Is it that difficult?
Sometimes,
you know, and I've been married since December 2012. I got married on New Year's Eve in 2012. So for a while now, we've been together. And, you know, it's always a practice, a daily practice of sacrifice and making time to connect. And it's mad work. I try to tell people all the time when we're single, yo, live your life, travel, do what you gotta do. Because once you are in a marriage, you are in it and you have to really work at it daily. You know? Yeah. And my daughter Charlie. But I get where you're coming from. Wow. I wanted to get to something else that you had texted me too, because we had talked about, oh, you had said something about, you wanted to comment about the struggles that come with buying a home. Because you mentioned in 2020, you bought a home. Did you buy the home right before the pandemic started or in the middle of the pandemic?
Bought the home. So I went into contract in April of 2020. So right before the bubble.
Right before the bubble.
Yeah. But I had, so this is what happened. The toxic ex during 2020 decided to call CPS for not. And not the first time either. He called CPS that the kids weren't eating or being taken care of. He called the Better Business Bureau regarding a company that I wasn't even operating at the time. I don't know if you recall, I was into baking and doing party planning.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
So he put, somebody anonymously put in a complaint that I was operating during COVID and that I had sold them desserts that were contaminated with salmonella, which was
the father of your children.
Mm-hmm. He had too much time on his hand during COVID. Holy. Way too much hands.
Yo.
So for me, it was like, yo, I need to get out of the fuck out of Dodge. I need to sell my house and I need to go somewhere else. Exactly what I did. And that's how I ended up where I'm living now because of that.
What a nut case. Like, mind you, this is the mother of my children that whose life I'm disrupting because I'm what, bitter?
Mm-hmm.
Yo, that's crazy. That's, yo, some folks will go through any lengths to make their misery have company.
Absolutely.
That's crazy. So what was it? But you say buying a home and the struggle. What was the struggle from actually buying a home?
Trying to figure out what loan I was going to go with. A million things.
Mm-hmm. So what was the actual struggle from like actually buying the home?
Figuring out loans, like which loan I was going to go mm-hmm. with. How are we doing this? The length of time. This house was purchased via from a flipping company who's actually stationed in Florida. Mm. I guess they were trying to wait me out because of the fact that they agreed to sell to me pre-bubble.
Mm.
So they knew they could try to get the house to sell it for more money. So I think they were trying to stall me. So I could be like, oh, this closing should have been done in 60 days. It's now 180 days. I want to pull out.
Wow.
But I was like, no, I want the house. So I kept dealing with BS on their end just so that I could stay and get the house. And then I was selling my house just so that I can buy this house, which is a whole nother pain in the ass.
I can imagine.
So you can't close on one property until you officially sell your property if you're using the means from that sale to buy the other.
Mm.
So it kept delaying the closing of me selling.
Wow.
And the closing of my buying. So it was just, you know.
It was like a limbo almost.
Yeah. So my seller was like, yo, if this is not going to happen within the next 30 days, I'm pulling out.
Wow.
So we were on the verge of that. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's very stressful.
Oh my God. Oh my God. So when did the click? When did it all work out for you?
With my attorney threatening to sue them because they were going to potentially cost me a buyer,
yeah. Shout out to your attorney.
Yeah.
Jesus. Wow. Okay. I got it. I'm here in the Bronx. I mean, just so you know, backstory. I've been in the city since like 2010-ish, you know. I lived in Harlem for a little bit, and then I lived in the Bronx for a while, and now I'm in Co-op in the Northeast Bronx. And here in this home, me and my wife, we bought this, we're shareholders in this cooperative apartment. And we've gotten it in 2022, we paid for it, and you know, hopefully we're here for the next 15, 20 years. And then once it's paid off, I leave it to the kids and move elsewhere. But I see how like so many people of our generation, millennials, who can't afford to buy a home right now.
Yeah.
Who either have to just stay with mom and dad or stay renting or move down south or whatever. I see how the scarcity of the market. I'm just like, yo, I tell my kids now who are, and I'm sure you will too, you need to tighten up with your money because it's only going to get worse.
Well, I tell them that all the time. And I flat out, like, I'm super transparent with them with regards to what my plans for them are.
Right.
That, you know, I'm waiting on monies that are due to me so that I can buy my oldest either a duplex or a quadplex so they can be quote unquote super and get a paycheck and then collect all the rents and also do any of the fixing.
No doubt.
And that the next 20 or 30K that I could store away, do the same thing for the next kid and then the next and keep that going. To have some sort of property generational wealth.
Right, right, right. And you know, you mentioned something you want to talk about is actually raising good humans and not assholes, as you put it. How do you raise a good person, not an asshole? What are the do's and don'ts that are applicable to your life as far as raising kids? And what are the hurdles to of parenting? Give me all of it.
So like for me, parenting has been a struggle altogether. And like, I have my own little PTSD thing going on. So I call it parenting through the stress and the drama.
Imagine.
That's PTSD. That's what it's there.
Yeah. No, and I like it because yes, you got to parent through the stress and drama. It's poignant. I agree.
So like, I've had to parent many different ways, styles wise, because I've gone through so many chapters. So like Aiden, you know, I was a single mom. So with him, it was a village. And I mean like legit village. Mm. I had between my parents, my close friends at the time, you know, his godfather, his godfather's parents, and his family, you know, his extended family. Aiden and I were basically adopted by his godfather's family. Mm. And talk about like second set of parents, second set of grandparents that I, you know, for me personally, right. that was all a blessing. Rough moments for me. Where I was able to rely on people who didn't know me from a hole in the wall until I brought my itty bitty to be cared for at their house. Mm. So that I could go to work in Manhattan.
Mm. But they were there for you.
And not just for me, but for him, 10 toes down, you know?
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Thank God you had that. What about as you got older with Blake? Did it get tougher? What was it? I know you have to go to school and all, but. What was it like parenting through two kids as a single mom? What was that like?
So Blake was a totally different kid than Aiden. Like Aiden was the mellow kid and the poster board child for having more. While Blake was the terror.
Really?
Yeah. We used to call her Angry Bear because she couldn't regulate her emotions and she would get frustrated and angry and go into, I would call it like Hulk mode. And she'd be like, smash, baby, smash. And just want to destroy everything. And
this was the girl, not the boy.
Yeah. She would throw some rough tantrums. And I was like, damn, I question, like, can't emotionally regulate. Yeah. Oh, that's a red flag for me. Is she on the spectrum? Mm-hmm. No, she's a really smart kid. And when you're that, you know, when you have high intellectual, even at our early age, everything's just so overwhelming. And yeah, you can't emotionally regulate. So that was the struggles that I had with her. And again, we still had the same village you know, their dad was in for a good year and a half, but then quickly out. Mm-hmm. So have that as a foundation as you're starting off, you know, dad and mom under the same roof, and then it quickly not be the case still at such a young age was a lot for her to process.
You know, quick backstory for me. You know, I have three daughters. My oldest, a 19-year-old, I met her when she was 5. You know, my wife had her before me. I was like 4 or 5 when I married my wife. So I've been with her ever since, of course, and she's my daughter. But I did recognize early on in those early years how there was a struggle of, how would I say this, of some kids who have a biological father that they had high hopes for. They seem to be disappointed that it didn't work out. So, you know, they long for that Family Matters, Full House, you know, culmination of, you know, just family. And they want something that that person cannot give them.
Yeah.
And there lies drama, trauma, grief, behavior sometimes. And we had to power through that as a family. So I would ask you, did you sense some of that with your two kids growing up, or were they able to adjust with your husband now?
So with my oldest, he doesn't connect with his biological dad. Mm. He's very disconnected. Mm. That's not what I want for him, but you know, he's old enough for him to make that decision for the most part on his own, right? And I'm right now in this chapter of, you know, I'm trying to move forward, but it's very hard to move forward when a child is dead bent on, I don't want this person in my life. So I'm like,
yikes.
Yeah. And, you know, I try to, with them, I always did my best with, regardless of what was happening between the two of us, I kept my mouth shut. That's for me to him to go through. He's your dad. Let him be your dad.
Right.
And for 2 years ago, there was a visitation that went downhill where he, according to my son, put hands on
him. No.
And it unfortunately took place outside in Nanuet at Normandy Gardens, and the cops got called. And I got called from the cops to come and pick up my two kids during a visitation visit.
Wow.
So my then 14-year-old was hell bent on, I'm not going back. I'm not seeing him. I'm not going back. I want nothing to do with him. And that's how PO number 5 came into place. Mm. And like, you know, I had to go to court because he refused. He was not going back. And I had to, so like he wanted to, on his own, go to family court and petition. Mm-hmm. But according to family court, if you're under the age of 17, you are not allowed to go to court and petition for anything.
Really?
So he submitted paperwork with written statements, signing them and petitioning them basically on his own for the most part.
Wow.
And had me drive him to family court for an emergency request. And the judge was like, he can't come into the courtroom. He's a minor. And I was like, wait, I'm confused. He's the one petitioning this though. And she was like, you have to petition. Wow. Do it on behalf of them. And I was like,
sucking me back into this madness.
Because I don't want to deal with this guy. I am diagnosed with having PTSD and heightened anxiety disorder because of the interactions with this dude.
Wow. I'm sorry you went through that, by the way.
So I was like, but lo and behold, long story short, the judge granted the PO along after going through a 4-inch binder of paperwork showing history from 2009.
Oh my God.
To current. So it took all of that for the judge to take it seriously. Wow. And they hadn't seen each other for 2 years. It wasn't until my son got sick.
That's Wow. Well.
Of course, absolutely. She's always been a daddy's girl. Even though she's never really, she's had it, but then it was taken away. And then it was, you know, the whole visitation every other weekend. You know, she loves her dad. And I get it. And I've had heart to hearts with her. Like, yo, I get it. I was my dad's shadow.
Right.
I know what a daddy girl is like. I, you know, and I want you to have that. I don't need to be a part of that though. Like I don't have to be there and assist with the facilitation of that relationship. You have your cell phone, you have your own number, you have his number mm-hmm. and his contacts. If you want to see him, speak to him, whatever, feel free to do so. That was the whole reason. So I'm not monkey in the middle.
I get it. Let me ask you one more thing. Irrespective of your kids, just for yourself, where you hit 40 this year, I'm hitting 40 in 2 months. What do you want your future at this moment in life to look like? Because 25 years ago, we were both griffins. You know, we were both, you know, wide-eyed kids, not knowing about life. But now here we are, 20 plus years later. What do you want for yourself for the future? What does the future look like for you in your mind?
Work-life balance, not having to give up the want of being a full-time mom. And just because I say full-time mom, it doesn't mean like I'm home barefoot and pregnant and, you know, hands in with all the kids. It means having the ability to be a mom and absorb the moments instead of miss moments.
I hear that. Because like I can relate. I felt like I've missed moments so far with all three of my kids at times, just being too busy and being caught up in my own stuff. Because one thing about parenting that I try to tell people who aren't parents, because I meet a lot of people who are like, I want to have a kid, or I'm single, I'm tired of being single, I want to be with somebody and settle down. And I'm like, just so you know, once you cross over to this parenting life, you have no more free time.
You really have to carve it out and like find it. And that's a struggle. That's a struggle. You know, you have three, four. And that's been one of my biggest, not arguments, but like that's been, I feel like I sound like a broken record. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I have these conversations with my husband. I'm like, where's our time? When are you taking me out to dinner? When are we taking just vacation? My husband and I have never taken a vacation, just the two of us. Just the two of us. We've never gotten on a flight, just the two of us, just to go and decompress and recharge. Mm-hmm. It's always a family trip.
Oh, yeah. I know the feeling. I can, as you say that, I can hear my wife's voice saying, we need some time away from this.
Yeah. And like, we try, like even last Friday, I was like, let's go out to dinner. But we have the littles. I'm like, they're going to have to come on with us. So here we are going to a nice Japanese restaurant on the expensive side. And they're coming with us.
Oh, my God.
They're eating well that night.
Oh, yeah. Damn kids. Oh, my God. I know the feeling. I mean, shout out to my mother-in-law. She's helped out a lot at times. You know, like, you stash kids there for like a few hours. Like, can you watch her? But, you know, Miss Suega, she's not always available. And sometimes you got to have the kids be with you or whatever.
Yeah, you make the sacrifice.
Yeah, and I try to tell people, like, guys, you don't have a kid right now, and you don't realize how valuable your time is that you have right now.
I've literally been logged in class remote and River B breastfeeding on one boob and me, like, move by camera so that you just see my face and you don't see anything else from the way, you know, from the chest down. And many a times my professor, I had this one professor in psych and she was like, are you breastfeeding? I was like, yep, that's why it's from the chin up. And she was like, I can always tell when you're breastfeeding. It's always from the chin up. I was like, they want it when they want it and I can't stop class. So she gonna have to
get this Cambodian milk while I'm learning something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my homegirl at work, she has to breastfeed. She'll pump at work, you know, give her like 10 minutes alone and she'll pump real quick and come back. And I'm just like, wow, like, yeah, you really have no time for yourself. Even at work, away from the kids, I got to prioritize their nurturing and their food.
I'm like, shit, there's no milk at home. Shit, I got to put in a Walmart order to be delivered in the middle of the day or towards between 2 and 4, so I know one of the kids will bring in all the groceries.
Right. Shout out to that service, that delivery service my wife always gets. I forgot the name of it. Yo, man, I like I said, as an OG now, with, you know, all these youngins are under me, I try to tell them, guys, live your life, travel. The planet is already crowded enough. We don't need more kids right now, so you know, do your thing, because once you get into this life, it's hard to adjust to it.
Well, my 15-year-old says that. She's like, because my dad has been smart ass with her. And he's like, oh, you're going to have kids? And she's like, no, I'm not. I see the struggle that mommy goes through. I don't want kids. I'm going to prioritize getting my degrees and making my business and becoming a chef. And then, I was like, good for you. Good for you.
Good for you. My oldest daughter's the same way. My oldest, you know, a lot of these, like I said earlier, a lot of these kids today, they're not even having sex.
No.
They're not having sex. They're not exploring. They're not drinking. The data is out there.
I've my kids' friends, my son's 16. I've heard in the car, how do you identify? Oh, I'm asexual. Not my son, but my son's friend. And I'm like, and I'm listening and I'm like, asexual. Hold on. And, you know, I obviously know what asexual means, but like, right. That caught me off guard.
Right.
I was not expecting that to be the case. And I was like, holy shit.
They're different today. They're very different. They don't care as much about sexuality in the sense of pursuit of it like we did like 25 years ago. Like we were the last horny generation. We're like teenage pregnancy and just, you know, just ditch parties and half a day at so-and-so's house. Wilding out. These kids today, they're either playing Call of Duty, they're either doing dances on TikTok, or hey, what's up, buddy?
This is my third. This is Jackson.
Jackson, what up?
Hi.
What? Hi. But yeah, but they're having fun. They're not really getting into mischief like we were. So,
oh, hell no. I got Dungeons and Dragons every Friday going on. Okay.
Which I'm amused by. I'm amused by that, but I will say this though. I will say some of our kids, they do lack a little street smart. They do lack a little bit of like
lack a little bit.
I'm being nice, but they don't. There's not even a street smart. There's certain social awareness or cues that they don't pick up as much, or they don't have the trial and error as far as learning certain social awarenesses. So like, you know, stuff like that, they're slow on. But listen, you're not ready to bring no baby to the house. I'm fine by.
That's fine. I could wait till I'm 80 years old for you to. I'm cool with that.
That's fine. I'll be a 90-year-old first-time grandfather. It's all good. But anyway, we gotta take off soon because a lot going on, and I gotta get to my daughter. She's bugging me, and
no problem.
We're gonna continue this another time.
Definitely.
But I know how you are. There's a lot more that's gonna be on your mind. You want to talk about? Oh. First of all, I want to say thank you for coming on.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you. And like I said, you are someone who I think about when I think about better times from yesteryear. Because like I said, I always appreciated your individuality. And like I said, you had a certain je ne sais quoi, like a certain unintelligible way of making your presence felt. And I think that speaks to, I think it kind of plays on what you were saying earlier about your father, about how you had the boldness to tell your mom a few things and how you had to like advocate for yourself, for your children. I think it shows that character trait that I saw early on, it's permeated through other parts of your life as someone who has had a strong will. And I'm still proud of your strength.
Thank you.
No, thank you. So I still admire you, and I hope we get to record again soon. And until next time.
All right, love.
All right, my love. So we'll talk.
All right.
All right, later. Have a good night.
You too.